I want to welcome Agile XRM to the podcast. I've known the people at Agile XRM for the past 12 years. I've seen how their business process management tool can add massive value to complex organizational processes in sectors such as finance and government. If you have complex processes or a need for dialogues on the Power Platform or Dynamics 365, take a look at how this BPM tool can add value. You can find them at agilexrm.com or check out the show notes for more details. Welcome to the Power Platform Show. Thanks for joining me today. I hope today's guest inspires and educates you on the possibilities of the Microsoft Power Platform. Now, let's get on with the show. In this episode, we'll be focusing on mixed reality, AR, VR. We'll dive into warehouse automation and who knows, sprinkle a bit of AI through there as well. Today's guest is from New York in the United States. He works at Mazars as a manager in system integration with Microsoft. He holds 16 certifications across Dynamics, Azure, and the Power Platform. He has done over 20 implementations across Dynamics, 365, F&O, CE, Power Platform, Mixed Reality in various industries. Check out the links for his bio in the show notes for this episode. Welcome to the show, Christian.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here again.
Yes. So, Chris, the last time you were on was actually a bit over 50 episodes ago. It was episode 447. So if you want to check out that conversation that we had, just go to podcast.nz365guy.com/447 and you'll be able to listen to that episode. So, and of course, that was around you being an MVP. And off the back of that, I was like, hey, we've got another recording to do here because you're doing some really interesting stuff that I think the community would find valuable and really opening their thinking in this space. So before we get into that, you know, normally I'd ask, you know, a bit about what you do. Now that's in the other episode and that's not too long ago, so people can go and listen there. But what have you been up to lately? What's been on your radar in the last, you know, couple of months, last 90 days?
Good question. Actually, I've been at Dynamics Community Summit, right? I'm in Charlotte. So professionally, that was it's always a highlight. Presented nice. There with my peer MVP colleagues on the second day at the second keynote, if you want to tell it, if you want to mention it that way. Had a couple of sessions on mixed reality, warehouse automation, as well as we're covering it today. And also commerce, and of course, Copilot needs to be part of that too. So that was one of my highlights that was within the last 90 days.
Nice, nice. How big was that event? As in, like, the last one I went to, run by that organization, was, where was it? It was
Texas.
Yeah. So wherever it went, I know that with Gus Gonzalez hired a vehicle. And we went to the place where the old Texan, you know, the cowboy movies and stuff used to be shot. There's some town there that it was, you know, Doc Holliday, all those type of things. I think it was back there. I might have got that wrong, actually. But it was an amazing experience. I don't know where we drove to, way out of town. Yeah, it was a highlight of that. And that was a pretty big conference at that time. And, of course, that was the last one before the pandemic hit. So, you know, what were the highlights of that event?
Wow. There are a lot of highlights, to be fair. It's always great to connect with your peers. The industry is very small, like a little family, I would say. Everyone knows each other from a consultant side. That's how it feels, at least. Great to connect with ISVs, other partners, with Microsoft themselves, and end users, of course, that come there and like to hear about the latest and greatest. And it's always good to hear their perspective, their pain points, their business problems. It gives a lot of insights as well what you know, clients actually need, what are actually their business problems, what impacts they're looking for. Because that drives, in the end, which solutions you should propose or, you know, tackle with them. So it's yeah. Those are my highlights usually from those summits. Yeah.
Yeah. So good. So good. Let's delve into, first of all, mixed reality, augmented reality, and virtual reality. Can you first, in your words, how, when people ask, well, what's the difference? How do you explain the difference between those three phrases?
Good question. Mixed reality itself, I mean, Microsoft mentioned the mixed reality spectrum, right? On the far left, you would see augmented reality, right? Where you overlay your physical environment with holographs, right? You can still see everything around you, but you overlay the reality. On the other side, you have the VR fully immersed experiences, right? Where you are in a fully immersed virtual environment or reality. And if you would take a couple steps up front, you'd probably walk against the wall because you don't see what's around you.
Yes. Right?
So that's the difference between those two on the mixed reality spectrum.
So the main players in the market, you know, that jumps to mind for VR is, of course, Facebook. And what they've got with Oculus, right? Would we also put in that category what Apple is doing in the space? Because although you can see the person's eyes, right, it's actually just you can't see through that device, right? It's not would you call that augmented reality or is that more virtual reality?
Good.
Or is it really blurring the lines between the both, really?
Good question. Let me start with the Meta aspect that you mentioned. Meta itself, yes, they have a VR headset, right? But the pass through with the Meta Quest 3 is very good as far as I hear it. I ordered it, so happy to get it soon. It was announced at Meta Connect, nice. Right? And what's also nice here is the relationship or the partnership that Meta has with Microsoft, right? Because Microsoft Mesh Experience is actually using the Meta VR devices. And we talk about it later, I know, but just want to highlight that fact as it fit good. Yes. There are devices that can have VR and AR experiences, right? And can deviate or can switch between those two.
Okay, and so Apple?
I haven't had my hands around it, but I'm excited to see how the experience is from a VR versus AR environment. As far as understood, you can switch between both. Let's see. It's coming in a couple months. So,
do you plan on getting one?
Oh, definitely.
Nice. And then I assumed that you've got Microsoft's device in the space. Have you on the V2 version?
Yes, I mean HoloLens 2. Definitely have a couple of those in my organization and one privately too. So
nice. Okay. So, and then I think there's one other surface that a lot of people, when we have these discussions, tend not to look at, and that is the fact that your iPhone, you can put your camera on and you could definitely do an augmented reality experience, right, from a tablet device, phone device, etc., is also in the mix. Yes, it's not a headset, but it's still part of how you could use this tech. Is that right?
Absolutely right. I mean, there are a couple of retailers actually that give you an AR experience, for example, for their furniture, right? You want to see if that new desk fits in your living room or that new couch fits in the living room. You can have that. Mm-hmm. You can use your phone as an AR device and blend it over the reality behind it, over the physical reality, and can see if that red couch is actually suiting, you know, into your living space. There are, of course, also phone applications or the phone can be used as an AR device.
Is this whole category still sitting well in the edge case scenario? Is it mainstream? You know, we heard that, for example, back in the media a while ago, that the US military probably bought every available device of HoloLens for obviously war game scenarios. Or is it more in that, or are you seeing businesses seriously adopting this technology and it's part of their business, like it, whether it's day to day, whether it's, you know, what are you seeing?
Very, very good question. Is it mainstream already? No, we're still early. However, I'm more and more clients get interested or seeing the benefits of it, right? And it's an emerging technology, right? It's still at a higher price point, right? If you roll it out across your workforce, for example, on the job floor, well, there is a price point associated with it, right? But what I usually start with prospects or clients approaching me is, what is your business problem? Often it's, we have a lot of, you know, quality issues on the job floor. Are we having, or our experienced folks, they get older and older and maybe go out of the workforce. We need to scale expert knowledge. or we need to have better training, repeatable training, because we have a lot of turnover, right? If that's the business problem, mixed reality could, for example, be a play to solve the business problem and have an impact on your ROI, right?
Yes.
In your bottom line. So that's usually what I try to plant the seed and encourage thinking outside of the box how those emerging technologies can solve your problem. Is it mainstream? Not at this point, but we're getting more and more excited and traction around it for sure.
I'll give you an interesting use case a friend of mine shared with me that worked at an oil refinery. And I was talking about this tech, and he's not a IT type person. He was like, oh, no, we've used that, you know, in the refinery. I was like, how did you come to use it? I'm like, oh, well, we had a particular problem. So the manufacturer of this part was in Europe. You know, we're on the other side of the world. And so we put it on, and he stepped through, you know, what we needed to do to get an outcome. But everything was being recorded, right? Because part of their health and safety policy required that everything was recorded, etc. And at one point, the guy was like, yeah, okay, that's it. I'll probably hit you up on another channel. Like, just inferred that we need to speak not with this on, because he was like, okay, so that's the official way of doing it. And now you just go and actually do this as the unofficial way, but this will get you the result. Do you see any of that kind of fear in the market that because this is now obviously monitoring both sides of a conversation, everything's been recorded logically, that it people are more reserved, if you like, in what they're necessarily going to say and do with the technology?
I have mixed feelings here because, for example, if you are on a Teams call and it's recorded, right, you would probably also be a little bit more cautious what you're saying, maybe.
Yes, exactly.
It's the same experience here, right? I mean, for example, with HoloLens 2, if you're running a remote assist session, yes, you can you can record it, but it's a similar thing you would have when you record with a Teams call, right? So I wouldn't I wouldn't say that. I actually think there are much more interesting use cases that you can have with the mobile nature of HoloLens 2, right? Let's talk about remote audit, right? Instead of traveling with a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 person team to the client to do a warehouse audit, guess what? You could potentially send the device, the warehouse manager wears it, you sitting at home as an auditor, and let the warehouse manager walk around and say, hey, turn left, turn right, up, down, do the count, do this, do that.
Yes.
Pull in instructions in your view. And those use cases or how you can solve those problems, mixed reality just or HoloLens 2 and mixed reality gives you another way to solve those in a, I would argue, more efficient way.
Yeah, awesome. So let's talk about those use cases. Mm-hmm. Warehouse audit, great, great use case. What are the other ones that you're seeing?
Well, of course, HoloLens itself or mixed reality, the theme around it or the story is all about empowering the frontline worker, right? Usually you didn't have the right information or those frontline workers didn't have the right information at the right time, at the right place. It means on the job, while doing complex tasks, and where you require that expert knowledge or a guided experience. So this is where HoloLens 2 comes very handy with, for example, the guides application or the remote assist application, where me as a manufacturing worker or an asset inspector can get a repeatable guide. I get guided through that complex process in alignment with safety standards, in alignment with best practices, and can execute the job, the complex job. I get literally the support that I need. And even if I don't know, I'm still getting stuck, I have the opportunity to, for example, call you sitting somewhere else in the world and get expert knowledge. And you seeing what I'm seeing, you can throw in arrows, pull up documents in front of me and give me the support on the job. Game changer. So this is one of the use cases that is pretty big. Also, field service, of course, with remote assist, if you're, you know, like I just make it up, you're doing a change of a wheel on a race car or something like that. It's a very easy example, but you could get the support from an expert that's sitting somewhere else while doing the job. That's another one that we're seeing. But again, internal scenarios like a assisted audit, it's more an internal scenario. Those are use cases that we're seeing more and more too. And this is specifically for AR, right? When we're talking about VR, I can mention Microsoft Mesh here. There are different use cases, more enhancing the collaboration. For example, in a more and more remote workforce, usually that feeling of togetherness, or you know, the tangible feeling, hey, we can, how we interact with each other is gone, because you have just two dimensions on a Teams meeting, right?
Yes.
And with Mesh, you can bridge that. You can have, for example, imagine the impact for designers, engineers, real estate developers. They can meet in a VR space and get access to that third dimension and collaborate with that third dimension. It's a game changer.
So that's an example I saw some years ago in Barcelona by Satya presenting, which was, let's say you had an executives for a multinational company.
Yep.
Rather than meeting on a Teams call, they could actually jump into a virtual room, all have their HoloLens on. They could turn to a wall, let's say a whiteboard or something like that, and they could proactively interface with that whiteboard and sketch out ideas and concepts and would this work, and have the to and fro backwards and forwards, or even run like a design thinking session, right, where people you know, use a method like Rose Thorn Bud, and they get their post-it notes and they go, what's working in the organization, what's not, and what's our opportunity to move forward. But it would allow the equivalent of a physical present. And of course, one of the other selling points of it was, when you leave that meeting, if anybody needed to go back and go, what do we say in there? What was on that post-it note up at the top right corner? You could actually jump back into that meeting, go over to that whiteboard or poster board and go, that's what it was. Because it would still be there. The artifacts from, you know, in other words, somebody couldn't wipe away your whiteboard, right? It was there. It was, you could revisit it at a later date as such in the archive file. Are you seeing any of that type of what was shown as, I think, the precursor to Mesh, or it might have been even referred to as Mesh then? It was definitely demonstrating HoloLens. Are you seeing any of that?
So there are multiple aspects to it. Let me start introducing a little bit more about Mesh first, right? Mesh itself, it differs a little bit to what you described. I would call it Teams on steroids, to be fair. It is a Teams-like experience. Again, you have access to the third dimension. If you have your Meta Quest Pro or your Meta Quest 3 on, you can access the VR space, or you can also use a desktop experience, but of course you don't get the third dimension feeling. I would always recommend using the VR headset. Here, the meeting is scheduled for 24 hours. At this point, there's a 16-user restriction, one tenancy restriction, but at this point, that's how it is. You can jump into the meeting. After 24 hours, you cannot access the meeting again. So that's how Mesh at this point works. But it's very smart positioned in terms of, it's more an add-on to Teams, like a cherry on the cake. You can access this with a Teams premium license rather than new SKU. So I think it's a great adoption strategy. To what you described, yes, there was initially introductions to how Mesh would look like on HoloLens, but that was at some point dropped, and Mesh was built more on top of Teams and more on the VR side versus the AR side. So that's where we're at right now.
Interesting. So if we looked at from the AR perspective, then what about the training scenario? Because some of the original ones were, let's say you're on a car manufacturing line.
Yep.
And you wanted to train people on, and of course you can do that visual overlay, and this is, you know, blah, blah, blah. Do you see a lot of the training, you know, organizations wanting to use the tech for complex training? That's physical world training?
Yes. I mean, we see a lot of, the key or core industries we're seeing traction or interest in mixed realities: manufacturing, education, and retail. Manufacturing we covered, right? You supporting the front-end worker. But you can also overlay, for example, via spatial anchors, data from IoT sensors. You're walking around the floor and you see, oh my God, okay, here the insights from the different IoT sensors. Pretty cool, actually. So it's more a contextual overlay. On the educational side, this is very broad. I mean, it could be like a healthcare support, right? To how to do implantology. I think we touched on that last episode too. Like training for implantology or for the healthcare sector, or it could be training for an electrician. It could be training for an architect or an engineer.
Yeah.
Or you can run simulations. So it is pretty broad. What we're seeing at this point is that a lot of clients are currently still interested in the guides application, what is an out of the box Microsoft business application based on mixed reality, right? Yep. And as a starting point or entry point, but when they get more tangible feeling for it and see the value add, they are more interested in doing those custom scenarios based on spatial anchors, right? The guide mixed reality out of the box application is a good low cost entry point to mixed reality and take advantage of repeatable guides.
Nice. How does licensing work with Microsoft in this tech?
Good question. Love that. And there's a license for the guides business application, right?
What's it around about in US?
$65, if I'm not mistaken.
A month?
Yes, per user.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
So that should be, or that's the guides / remote assist license, right? And of course, if you build custom applications, I mean, there's some Azure consumptions and stuff like that
may
take place.
Are Microsoft still heavily investing in this space, in your experience? Being that it's not on my radar of the folks I'm working with in Microsoft's, but I'm just, as someone that's, you know, close to it yourself, are you still seeing that investment? Because I know that there was whispers that people will let go in the space.
Yes. I mean, unfortunately, I mean, AI and Gen AI is great, right? But of course, this is in everyone's mind or mouth. So a lot of things are actually, this is the core focus, right? But there is investment in industrial metaverse. But I guess the core or the focus of Microsoft is still AI at this point. It's exciting to see what happens if there's more adoption, right? As we just talked about, Apple bringing out their VR or their mixed reality device, right? Maybe getting more, you know, consumers introduced to that technology, because at this point, I think if I'm walking out on Times Square and talk to 10 people, if they've, you know, tried it out or played around with it, you'll probably get maybe one that said yes. It's still early, as I said, an emerging technology, but it will disrupt industries in various ways.
You just used an interesting term then, which was the industrial metaverse, which we hadn't mentioned yet. And I know it's a term that I'm hearing more and more in Microsoft circles. What is the industrial metaverse?
Multiple things. One is, of course, access to VR, AR devices. Then there is digital twin technology, cloud technologies of computing is also part of it, right? IoT sensors. It all plays together into a virtual representation of an organization or a process, right? I mean, we have, for example, already touching on the warehouse robotics and optimization side or automation side, a partnership with NVIDIA, right? NVIDIA Robotics, and they're running a complete digital twin of their warehouse and optimize routing here. So those scenarios we will see more. Then, of course, the VR and AR component is also part of that industrial metaverse story, as we described.
What type of companies are talking about industrial metaverse? Are they pretty much in manufacturing?
Most of the folks that reference industrial metaverse, they are in the manufacturing distribution space. You're on point here.
I was listening to a podcast yesterday from Joe Rogan, who had Elon Musk on the show, and Elon was saying something very interesting. He goes, Joe Public doesn't understand how complex manufacturing is. You know, he said something like, you can have 10,000 things that need to happen to produce something, and 999 of those might go right, but the one that doesn't, it means the product doesn't ship, right? It actually means a heap of rework, etc. And he goes, because there's, and he said this, he said, because there's never been a movie about manufacturing, he said the public don't understand manufacturing and just what's involved and the complexity to manufacture products at scale. Now we add what you're talking about, digital twins, etc. Are you seeing that as an enabler, as in, you know, what are people's thinking? Because I saw a demo some years ago, and it was either by GE or Boeing around aircraft engines and how They have created digital twin equivalents and allows them to run scenarios digitally that it allows them to find insights, wear points, break point, all that type of stuff without actually having to do it in the physical world. Or it gives them insight to lead to that. And then I've heard recently of an example of a company that this guy's role inside the organization was to understand the impact of a crash test on the model of vehicle that they were manufacturing. And he was saying that the problem was he could only do so many crashes a year and collect the data around those. And every division in the company for every model of car were also had their separate teams doing that. And once he tied into the collective data of everything, they were able to massively reduce the physical crash scenarios that had to generate because they were doing it electronically. I was like, man, this shows the power of data and electronics is so much cheaper than physically taking a car and smashing against a wall or crash test dummy or whatever it was, right? What are you seeing in that warehouse space, automation space, manufacturing space where, you know, technology is taking much more of a front seat role because ultimately it's a more cost-effective way?
Good. Very, very, very lovely examples, actually, that you brought up. As you said, digital twins and technology around that, the benefit of it is actually that you can run scenarios, right? In the warehouse field, especially warehouse automation field, where you, for example, have robotics running around to do your picking and drop it at the put wall, right? Where then your worker just needs to, you know, do the final containerization. Here orders come in real time, right? It's not that you have a static data set that, you know, you need to work off. Orders change, cancellations, new orders coming in, and there is a constant rerouting and recalculation of what is the most efficient way to get to that product based on where it's stored in your warehouse. So that logic and running those simulations via digital twin are powerful because you can reduce walking times or routing times massively. This is one scenario that we are partnered up with NVIDIA Robotics actually, and they're very strong at.
Interesting. Tell us about AI and Copilot. I know we've smashed through our time pretty quickly. It's such an interesting topic. But what are you doing in this space?
Well, there's a lot of cool things happening on the AI, Gen AI, Copilot side of things. I mean, just talking about business application space, right? From commerce, right, where you can create content via Copilot instead of you manually need to recreate the product descriptions and the content for your website. You can use ChatGPT or in that case, Copilot and Azure AI Service, right? You can reply to custom emails based on the sentiment or the history. Can summarize a project status reports or projects to his project status report. I just named literally examples across, you know, Dynamics 365 project operations, finance and operations, supply chain, commerce, marketing, sales and service. I mean, across all those product lines, we see those, enablers or things that make your process more efficient. What is great in the end for the end user, because things that probably were not the favorite part of your day usually are now taken on by those co-pilot processes, and you can literally focus on higher value adding tasks, what is great.
So yesterday I was in a session with Ryan Cunningham. He was in New Zealand and I attended a session, and he said something very interesting. He said, "Where will you still be relevant in 3 years?" Right? And I thought it was an interesting one. It was interesting coming from him, and interesting that he was, of course, talking about co-pilots and AI. And I've done another show around ecosystems with a bunch of mates, and it's about, you know, the value pyramid and the ecosystem pyramid is at the top of it are building apps and solutions, which really in the next 3 to 5 years, I don't think we'll have a concept of low code. We'll have a concept of no code, right? Because you will use however advanced the AI has become. And I see OpenAI said this week that they're in the final stages of GPT-5, right? And the training around that. So we're seeing some you know, massive speed. In this year, we've gone from, what, 3.5 turbo to 4 to now 5 has been talked about publicly. 3 years' time, right? If we got 3 in the last year, how much is that acceleration going to increase? And how much of what we do manually now do you see is going to be so awesome in that we can tap into amazing data sets and knowledge and build things that we, you know, might not have the developer, we might not be programmers, we might not know how to, the nuances of it, but of course, in the advances of these large language models, who knows where we'll go? Will it be a large language model? What will be the next of any of where we are going, you know? What's your thoughts, your crystal ball for the next 3 years?
Very, very interesting perspective and question. I mean, if you think back historically, technology, where it came from, where it went, initially when computers got introduced or the internet, and there was always talk, oh, you know, like it makes things, you know, redundant. And yeah, there are certain roles that will be probably changed. But for example, just talking about the Copilot programs to start with, as it says, it's branded as Copilot. There's still a pilot in the pilot seat that needs to, you know, trigger, and it should be that way, right? You still need to, you know, validate and adjust things because it's not perfect at this point. I'm looking out to the future, as you said, will I be still relevant? I think so, because in the end, it makes your day more efficient. There will be probably a shift to other tasks or responsibilities. Instead of, you know, like doing the low hanging fruit tasks, you can shift to more rewarding or high evaluating tasks. I still think we will be in the loop, and we should. There's also that concept of safe AI, how to implement it responsibly, and those discussions. And we should take that seriously, right? That we are still in the loop, we are still in control. And yes, there will be a shift in roles and responsibilities, and certain roles and responsibilities will not be there anymore. I'm certainly think that, but it will just change your focus to other tasks, or your role will just change like it did in the past, right? With technology involvement, it was not, oh, okay, now, you know, things completely got wiped out. It was more, hey, things changed, a different skill set became more needed. And especially when you talk about the coding part, right? I mean, GitHub Copilot, you probably checked it out already.
Yes.
It is great for, you know, doing, you know, 75%, 70% of your, you know, your work, especially low-hanging, no complex kind of work. But there still needs to be someone who needs to understand it, validate it, make sure to tweak the remaining, you know, 25-30% of issues. So there still will be a need for developers in terms of experts that understand it and can, you know, bring it to the over the finish line. Even though it's getting more efficient, there will be still an expert needed to validate, sign off on it, make sure it doesn't do, you know, crazy stuff. So I still think that the terminology Copilot programs or Copilot in general is very meaningful in that regard.
But we're talking about 3 years' time. In 3 years' time, will you and I be the co-pilot? In other words, the AI is the lead, and they're saying, hey, we'll augment you in when we need you, human. And we believe in co-pilot. It's just that you got the wrong role reversed here. I'm the pilot. You're the co-pilot. I mean, we're talking 3 years' time, you know? And in our civilization, the intelligent species always rise, the most intelligent species always rise to the top. This might be a non-biological intelligent species that's about to, you know, in 3 years' time, might want humans to be co-pilots. It's the pilot.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I personally don't believe you should let it get that far. And
I wanted to get that far because I think it would eliminate so much of the bias in the world that's either biased because of geopolitical bias, because of greed, because of so many of these things. You could have an AI that has that all cleaned up out of it and says, listen, I'll act in the best interests of humankind. It's just not all humans are going to like what the best interest is going to look like that have been financially motivated and or greed motivated, etc., up to this point.
Yeah, and as you said, perspectives are always different from which background you're coming, and so that will be a hard one. I mean, I personally believe innovation in the past and in the future brings together technology, ideas, processes, and people. And the people, the people element will still be relevant and an important factor in driving technology. It's not the other way around.
Yeah. It's interesting to speculate, right? It's interesting. We might find that we've already in the matrix and are just used as fuel cells. But yeah, good. Chris, so good chatting to you. I love it. I love bouncing this type of thing and seeing the insights of what you're doing. I think that your particular area of tech is so exciting because it is blending so many of, you know, some would say the bleeding edge of technologies. It's definitely the cutting edge, right? And how, you know, in the last 12 months, AI coming so prevalent in this mix of AR, VR, mixed reality. I think, mate, you're in an exciting place.
Yeah, I mean, if you add a little bit AI sprinkles over VR, I mean, there are certain scenarios where both can come together, right? Also, for example, with large language model bot in VR. Let's say for onboarding, right? I'm getting hired today and I don't know what my role is, right? You could have a large language model bot in VR, having a VR onboarding experience instead of those static videos that, I'm sorry, I mean, probably nobody watches anyway when you get onboarded, right? You can have a more, you know, engaging experience and in the end have a bot there that answers based on your knowledge base what the role of a senior consultant should do, what the role of an accountant should do, how many PDO days do I have, instead of, you know, trying to find an employee handbook that may take you an hour. So there's also use cases where VR, AR can come together with AI here. That's what I'm currently exploring a lot, actually.
I love it. Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Business Application MVP Mark Smith, otherwise known as the NZ365 Guy. If there's a guest you'd like to see on the show, please message me on LinkedIn. If you want to be a supporter of the show, please check out buymeacoffee.com/NZ365 Guy. Stay safe out there and shoot for the stars.